Welcome to Step Into Magic, your weekly online radio show on how to develop your psychic ability, deepen your spirituality, and find your own true purpose. Presented by acclaimed medical intuitive, Josephine Lang. This broadcast is a part of the Wisdom and Intuition Network at metaphysicalwisdom.com. This is Anthony Taylor, your host, and on behalf of Josephine, I'll be taking your calls and questions. This week's topic is deepening our knowledge of ourselves. For those of you who are new to our show, Josephine has been a clairvoyant healer for more than 25 years. During that time, she's helped thousands of people from around the world to heal from hard-to-diagnose and chronic health issues. She has also been a teacher and spiritual mentor for hundreds of people who treasure her insights, courage, and love.
Hello, everyone. So I'm so glad you're all listening. I think of you all over the place and, you know, across the nation and in Europe and Australia and South America. And it just warms my heart so to know that you're listening and really makes me happy. So I'm so glad to say hi. Today I'm going to be discussing how our deep knowledge of ourselves allows us to lead lives that can be more filled with love, both within and without. And accounts of near-death experiences inform us that commonly we are asked two questions at the end of our lives. The first is, how have you loved? And the second is, how could you have loved more? We cannot give what we do not have, so leading a life that is rich with love starts with self-love. But before I go into this topic any further, I always like to begin our show with a spiritual agreement. And this, as many of you know, was a gift from our friend and mentor, Jana Massey. And I ask you all to join in and make this agreement with me. And it goes like this. Together, we acknowledge that everything that we think, that we say, and that we do at this time will be of the highest good. And together we ask for truth, the understanding of that truth, and the wisdom to use it in our lives. Can you all agree?
I do.
Thank you, Tony.
Josephine, we received some beautiful messages from our listeners this week. The first is from Fran, and she writes, clearing the path for my soul's growth has been my main focus all of my life. I have often sought mentors, teachers, guides who could help me synchronize with my inner wisdom. Jana was one of my dear teachers, and of course, you, Josephine, so dear and near to me, are my soul journey growth catalyst. Thank you for being a graceful, soft voice, for being an empowered woman. Love your energy, your fan, Fran.
Oh, thank you, Fran. I love you, too.
We also had one from Danielle, who went to the contact page of Josephine's website, stepintomagic.com, and wrote, I would love to receive your weekly newsletter. I look forward to your show every week. All the best, Danielle. Thank you for that, Danielle. You've been added to the list. And we also received a very nice and supporting message from Rosa in Santa Cruz. She writes, to hear how you and Frank work together is such a good example for many of us. Your examples with Frank are showing us there is a different way of living. We need to listen and experience. You're teaching us life.
Aww.
And finally, Ina, a listener and dear friend from San Luis Obispo, sent in this quote when he heard our topic for this week. It's from Albert Einstein. And we liked it so much, Frank made a slide for us. And here it is now.
Yes, and thank you, Frank, for the beautiful slides, and thank you, Tony, for all those lovely messages, sharing them, and thank you, everyone, for writing in. It's really wonderful to have all of this encouragement. Your kind and loving words really fuel me forward, and it's always really nice, I think, to start off our show with gratitude. It's a great way to begin any venture that we do together, so I'm really, really grateful. And this slide, Einar, thank you so much for sending it in, because it's exactly on topic. So I really appreciate it. And I'll just read it out. It's beautiful. A human being is part of a whole, called by us universe, a part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts and feelings, as something separated from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires, and to affection for a few persons nearest to us. Our task must be, to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. Albert Einstein. Isn't that something that's so profound?
It is, yes.
And in a way, this message right here from Albert that Einer sent in is today's show in a nutshell. The illusion of our three-dimensional reality really limits our expression of being. And very interestingly, I've been studying some of the near-death experiences lately, and they really show how there is that great opening. One of my very favorite near-death experiences was one that I got to experience indirectly from the person who had the experience. This was one of my brother's high school girlfriends, and she was having dinner with her family, and it was a kind of a big group. There was maybe, I don't know, a dozen people sitting around the table, and she was, as she was eating, she was chewing on a piece of steak, and suddenly she took a breath, and the steak went down into her throat, and it got lodged there. And she started to die. She couldn't get a breath, and her eyes rolled up in her head, and she started to turn blue, and the whole family was very distraught. Her mother ran over to the phone book and started pawing through looking for emergency numbers. This was in the early 1970s, and so it was before the time of 911 where you could call for emergency numbers. And it was also before the time when a lot of people were given CPR instructions and knew how to kind of resuscitate somebody, so that wasn't quite in our group mind knowledge just yet at that point. And so nobody really knew what to do. I mean, they had started off giving her a few ineffectual pats on the back, but nothing like that seemed to work. So she actually fell off her chair and landed on the floor, and everybody was sort of standing around looking at her and wondering what to do. Her mom was crying as she was fumbling with the phone book, and cousins and nephews were, you know, really worried and starting to cry. And meanwhile, my brother's girlfriend found herself suddenly up in the oak tree out in front of the house. It was nighttime, and she was up there amongst the upper branches, and she was looking at the stars and feeling the breezes in the top of the tree. And she was also present in the room that was there and what was going on the scene. She could feel she could be right in the hearts and minds of her cousins and nephews as they were so upset, and her uncles who were trying to pat her face and things to try to revive her. And she was in her mother's hands as she was moving through the yellow pages, looking in her tears. And then she was also below the house in the dirt beneath the home and up in the sky in the stars. And then she was also, her consciousness was also in a car that was approaching where a friend was coming late to the dinner party. And as he was driving, he came and parked the car, turned off the radio, got out of the car door, and she was right with him as he was doing all of this simultaneously with all of the other experiences that were going on, plus her own experience up in the tree and down below the house. And then he came to the door, and he knocked on the door, and nobody answered, and he kind of heard the confusion inside, so he just went on in, and he happened to know the Heimlich maneuver, and he picked her up off the floor and gave her a big hug, and poof, out came the piece of steak, and she was whisked off to the emergency room, and she was perfectly fine in just a couple of days. And she told me about the experience directly, and I was so transfixed hearing this story as a young person. It really left a very deep and lasting impression on me to realize how vast our consciousness is, just a step away from our day-to-day consciousness. And so, you know, when we say something like what Einstein is saying here about our limited perception separating us from the rest, there's a lot of truth to this. So the illusion of our three-dimensional reality really does limit our expression of being. And these near-death experiences can really help us to understand how our real consciousness is really quite vast. And there was another story that I recently came across. A woman has recently moved to our area, and we've been in email contact, and I'm very much looking forward to having a lunch or tea date with her. And her name is Grace Babulka Hatmaker. And she has a book, and it's on the Internet at Amazon. And she's also was on the cover of Time magazine in 1994 for her near-death experience, cover of Life magazine. And in her near-death experience, she found herself sailing along, just flying through this tunnel, and there were all of these light specks all around her that kind of helped to kind of form the tunnel in part. It was sort of a foggy thing, but these specks of light were all around her, and she realized that that was the consciousness of everyone else moving along with her. And as she moved along, the scene got clearer and clearer, and she realized that she was one drop of light in a sea of light. And so when we speak about our consciousness being like a drop of water in the ocean, we can see that we can understand more clearly our own divinity, because this sea of light was that which we would call God, that deep, all-pervasive spiritual quality of the universe. What Einstein is referring to here when he says, you know, a human being is a part of a whole called by us universe, but how we limit that expression, that understanding of that, and that what we need to do is to widen our circle of compassion. And that's what happened with Grace. As she moved into this space with all of this light around her, she began to realize that, oh my gosh, you know, here I am, one little part of divinity, but I am of divinity. So I think that's really beautiful, the tunnel of billions of light, and honoring our divinity with loving self thoughts is a really important part of that, because that way we are expressing our love not only for the divine, but also, well, not only for ourselves, but also for the divine. So self-love is a really important thing, and it helps us to acknowledge the part of our expanded consciousness. And self-love also promotes our growth toward that expanded consciousness, the loving compassion of which is then reflected back to us in the world around us. Just like Einstein was referring to, we want to widen that circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature and its beauty. Maybe, Tony, you can show that next slide for us.
Certainly.
This is one of my favorite quotes. It's by Henry Ford, and he said, "Whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're always right." And the reason why I love this slide and why I feel this quote and why I feel it really applies to us now is that whatever we think and believe becomes our reality and our truth. And so if we think that we are a part of divinity, then we are a part of divinity. And we can really open ourselves up to our love of ourselves. So there's another really profound near-death experience that was covered quite thoroughly in the news, and she did a lot of radio interviews, and then she even wrote the title of which, I love this title, Dying to Be Me.
Mm.
Isn't that great?
Very good.
And this is by Anita Moorjani, Moorjani. And Anita had this incredible experience of about 4 years of dying with cancer, nearly 4 years. And her body was completely filled with cancer, and all of her organs shut down. And she was given 36 hours to live. And then she went into her near-death experience. And she said, you know, after she came out of it, that the cancer should have killed her. And if not the cancer, then her complete organ shutdown, because all of her organs did shut down, should have killed her. And if neither of those killed her, then the billions of cancer cells leaving her body, because they did, without any organs to move them out, that should have killed her. But nothing killed her, because she understood at that point in her life, while she was in her near-death experience, she saw that she was and is a part of the divine in her perfection of being. And in that very awake state, she understood that nothing, nothing outside of herself could affect her. And that once she made the decision to come back, which she did, I mean, she reached a point, and you hear this in near-death experiences, where it's like, you know, I had my Aunt Rita who said, you know, she went up to the pearly gates and St. Peter said, "Rita, it's not your time." And so she went back. You know, there's things that happen where we reach this point where it's like you could come back or you can stay. And sometimes you're given the direction. Grace Babulka Hatmaker said that in her case, she was given the directive to go back, that she had a responsibility for her children. And she said that it was like being told as a child that you have to go to bed now. There's no, you know, discussion, this is the time. And so she had to go back because she was so enjoying that experience with all the light and being surrounded by divinity. But she was reminded, no, you need to go back. And the same thing happened to Anita. She got to that point where she could be allowed to die, but she could also go back, and she chose life. And then she said that once she made that decision to live, she knew that there could be no cancer because living meant to live. And then with this new belief and understanding, all of her cancer was gone. Every cell responded to her decision and healed almost immediately. And this experience reminds me of a quote that I remember Peace Pilgrim, you know, one of my other favorite mentors, that she said. And she said, "Once I understood that nothing, no thing outside myself could harm me spiritually, I just felt so free." She said that she realized that she could only be harmed spiritually by her own wrong actions or her own wrong reactions. And that feels very similar to me to Anita's perception. That, you know, once we have an understanding with inside of ourselves, then we know that we are the creators of our reality from within ourselves. And Anita goes on to say that our mass consciousness, which is formed through our shared beliefs, creates our shared reality. That together we all believe certain things, and that whatever we believe, we join into collaboration with, and then that creates our shared reality. And she said we create our 3D illusion through our focus. And then she goes on, and I love this part. She makes the distinction between being loving and being loved. So she says that being loving can potentially drain our energy without an external replenishment of the supply, whereas being love comes from our loving of ourselves unconditionally. And when we do, our love overflows to others. It goes like this. The more I love myself, the more it overflows and others get to receive it. And they don't even have to behave in any particular way. It's just there for them, flowing my own love out of myself. Anita says, "I will not stop being love on account of another person's actions or behaviors." And this is very similar to what Ram Dass says when he says, "Do what you must with another person, but never take them out of your heart." So I feel that opening to our beingness opens us to love and opens us to a shift, thus, in our shared reality.
Wow, Josephine, that's some very inspiring thoughts and messages there. It seems like it's an essential wisdom that's been known to, you know, all people throughout all time, expressed in different ways. You know, this idea that at our core, at our beingness, as you refer to it, we're simply love.
Yes, I think so. And I think it has been known through all time to most of us in different, you know, ways. And certainly in our bardo state, you know, the state between birth and death, I think that we are very much in touch with that, experience. I once had to ask myself, you know, for a little recollection of what the energy was like with my birth. And it was as if there was this box, and this silver light came zooming down into the box, and then the box lid closed on it. And it was a little leaky at the seams, so I could still kind of see some of the light, silvery, you know, light sort of poking out around the corners and the edges. But I thought, ah, isn't that something? You know, here we are. We are a part of this amazing light, and then we put a little skin around it, and it kind of shuts us off from everything else a little bit, sort of that separation feeling. But we really are still a part of that light.
It's very interesting that you should say that. And then also because light's mentioned in so many of these recounts of near-death experience, because it seems to me that, you know, when we meet a newborn baby, it's been my experience that they do seem to have a light sort of like emanating from them. They're like bathed in light.
Yes, they are.
And then we get something similar at death, don't we, when people have just lost someone.
Yes.
There seems to be a light there as well.
Yeah, especially in the person who is dying.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times you'll see that light. Not always, but a lot of times you will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now here's another part to this beingness idea here. When we strive or pursue, we are searching outside of ourselves. And when we allow ourselves to be, being exactly who we are, our own reality emerges because it is who we are. We become the artists of our lives. So we experience increased harmony and decreased discord. And we've become really centered in ourselves. And I think that in childhood, we often get to be in touch with this idea of beingness. And we mentioned it a few weeks back on the radio show, how children take so regularly take time to just be. They're just sitting, they're just being who they are. And I think we even had a little exercise, a little homework assignment to just take some time and just be who you are. No radio, no disturbances necessarily, just, you know, bump, bada, bump, bump, bump. Just here I am. And that's the folks, the adults who retain that ability into adulthood, the people who retain it into adulthood, tend to be really highly creative. That's part of the creative function that we have. And, you know, when you think about, you know, the creator, and you think about us as being a part of the creator's energy, created by the creator, then there we are in creation, creating our lives and being creative.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a nice thought to sort of play around with. So, we want to become the artists of our lives. We want to really center ourselves in who we are. And when we do, I think that when we are being truly who we are, I like that puzzle piece theory of life, you know, the jigsaw puzzle, where I'm the piece that has the little corner of the barn and the tree and the blue sky behind. And, you know, that's me. And I fit right in the whole scheme of everything if
mm-hmm.
I am being true to myself. That's kind of a nice thing. And, of course, how do we kind of get in touch with our beingness and center ourselves within ourselves and remember our childhood abilities to be and to who we were and how we can be in the world? Well, that is great for us to do in our sanctuary. And that's how this whole self-love, know thyself idea, Dre, because this is the deep inner work that we can do when we are alone with our thoughts and taking time to be by ourselves. So as some of you know, I have a wonderful room that we have designated in our home to be the healing room, and I've got my altar in here, and I've got, this is where I do my radio show. I look out at the mountain and I look at my map of the world, and you know, I get to just really bathe in this sort of essence of things that reflect who I am to me. And I get to do my dream interpretation in here. And one of the things that's in this room above the altar, above a mirror over the altar, is a little sign that says, "Know thyself." And that was the inscription over the ancient city gates of the ancient city of Delphi. And so maybe you can show that next slide now, Tony.
Certainly.
And it just says, "Know thyself." And knowing ourselves is what we need to do in order to be who we really are.
Yes, what you're talking about now, it reminds me so much about the gnosis. You know,
oh, yeah.
Just meaning the knowing, and this was like the essential message of the Gnostics, you know, to know yourself and to know the divine part of you, that your essence is divine. And for the Christian Gnostics, that became to know that your essence is the Christ and that the Christ is in you and you are divine, everyone is divine. That message.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, so... you know, it's interesting because a lot of times in our cultures we are sort of taught that self-love is selfish, but really it's not at all selfish. It's about really standing in our truth so that we can give from our greatest place of power, really, our own true self. And our inner dialogue is really critical to our human expansion into our truth and into the truth of our reality, which is oneness with everything and with our divinity. So I think that really the best place for us to start with our self-love, which is often best done in our sanctuary where we can have privacy, is to start by changing our inner dialogue, because the degree of self-love that we have there in our inner dialogue either allows or slows our expansion of consciousness. There's another teacher that I love, which is Neil Donald Walsh. And he says, you know, if you have a negative program running in your internal dialogue, some negative thought, he says you don't need to fight against it and try to push it away because, you know, what we resist persists. But he says, just go ahead and think of 5 more thoughts that you'd really like to think. Isn't that a great
idea.
Tool?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, so, you know, if that thought, that negative thought comes up, like, oh, if only I could stop procrastinating or whatever it might be, you know, I'm so terrible at this. You know how we all can have those kind of negative programs running. He just says, you know, notice those when they come up, think about them, and then write 5 more thoughts that you'd maybe rather have be what you create in the world. I think that's so great.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, from my, work as an Alexander Technique teacher, we see that, what you said before about what resists persists. We see that in people's movement behaviors all the time. The things they try and eradicate, they end up holding on to.
Yeah.
It's much better to accept them and then learn something else.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Louise Hay, what a wonderful, amazing woman she is. Talk about standing in your truth and in your power and shifting your consciousness and then also your shared reality through shifting consciousness. She wrote that beautiful book, You Can Heal Your Life, which I mention regularly because it's really worth mentioning. And if you haven't had an opportunity to read it yet, by all means, pick up a copy and dive right in. I think she's sold 40 million copies, which is extraordinary. It's so great. And it really heralds to me a true shift in our world and in our understanding of who we are. And it gives me great joy because it really helps me to see that we're going to make it as human beings, by golly. We're learning and we're growing just as fast as we can and at just the right pace. And, of course, as well, forgiveness is such a huge part of this practice, and this is something that our dear friend Einar is so good about reminding us all to, just always move to forgiveness, And then, as well, we can also, if we really work through our feelings about a situation, we can move into understanding, where this, like, for instance, the parents when they were children, they did the best job they could, that sort of thing. And the teachers with Jana, my mentor, used to say that forgiveness was the law of erasure, that it erases the hurt so that the truth can be made known, which I think is so beautiful. And then as well, remembering, spending time in our sanctuary to remember our lives, to go through our memories, to see where we might be holding on or where we might need to employ some forgiveness so that we can begin to let go of some of the places where we hold that might create bitterness or frustration for us or lack of love, any of the barriers to love. And so spending time in our sanctuaries doing that kind of work is a really good thing to do. And I love one of the things that Louise Hay recommends is that, in regards to maybe some hurts or pains that we feel regarding our parents or other people when we were young and growing, to, not only realize that they did the best job that they could, but that they probably were reacting out of their own pain and injury when they were children, perhaps. And so to see them as little children and to just love them as they were in their childlike state, and then to just place them in your imagination, just to place them in your heart and just let them have a place there, understanding that they did the best that they could. So, Louise has taught so much about self-love that she inspired me to come up with a little 10 steps to self-love, and I'd like to go ahead and share them with you now. So the first step is to say, I love you. And every morning when you go to the bathroom mirror, just look deeply into your own eyes and say your name out loud and then say, I love you. I really love you, just exactly as you are. And this is an exercise that I learned from Louise from her book. And that's why I have a mirror over the altar in my healing room, because it's a great thing for us to do, to look into our eyes and say, I love you. And sometimes this exercise can be a little hard to do. We have so much self-loathing programmed into our culture and into our internal dialogue habits that one wise, dear friend of mine said that she had to start by saying, I'm willing to learn to love you just exactly as you are. And then in time with dedicated practice, you will find that this exercise becomes easier and easier the more you practice it. So I welcome you to practice that one. So that's the first. The second one is to forgive yourself. And you need to remember that a lack of forgiveness is a block to self-love. And just as we need to forgive others, we need to forgive ourselves as well. And so we can begin by simply stating the words, I forgive you. And then, like I was mentioning about memories, it's good to take time to review our lives frequently and to forgive ourselves for every event wherein we've felt some sort of discord in our lives. Then the third is to practice positive self-talk. Notice when you're blaming or shaming yourself and realize that these are only mental habits and that they can be changed really easily with practice. Lovingly catch yourself, just like you would a small child. If they were running for trouble, you just reach out, grab that little kid, bring him back into the fold, and acknowledge what's good about yourself. And then practice, 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 until more and more of your thoughts about yourself are loving, respectful, and positive. So this is something that I've done in my life. And so I used to have a lot of negative self-dialogue. And you know what? I really don't anymore. It's so great and it's so freeing. And so I really hope that you can practice it. Like I had some rough times there. A couple of times I had to spend a year in bed and with injuries and things. And so I got the opportunity, I just practiced away. It was tempting to, I'll never be any good. Oh, I'll never be able to do anything. And oh, what use is my life and blah, blah, blah. And, just persist and see if you can't make it through. It worked for me. And number four is to treat yourself gently. And I came up with this little affirmation for myself some time ago when I was working on this, and it was that I want to know that I am my own precious darling child. So know that you are your own precious darling child, and realize that all growth takes time. And when you're embracing new ways of being, it's okay if you mess up a little from time to time. We all do. Just forgive yourself and keep working at it. And loving yourself is your divine birthright. So trust the process, and it will all come to pass. And then think good thoughts. Thoughts are easy to change. Find good ones and have them ready to replace any negative ones, like Neil Donald Walsh was saying. And it's not so much that we need to replace them. It's that we want to just bring in more positive thoughts along with them to kind of keep them company so they don't feel so all alone. And then I like to focus on gratitude. And it can be as simple as being grateful for another new day or for the arms that I have with which I can pick up and throw flowers into the air. Just anything will do. Or grateful for the very next breath that we have. It's all so amazing and wonderful here in our bodies on the earth. Number six is to give and get help. Don't hesitate to ask for help and look for ways to help others. We all love to help each other. We feel honored when someone asks us for our help, and we always feel good about ourselves when we give someone else help. So it's okay to ask, and then look for ways to pay it forward. One of the great wisdoms that I came across was from Gay Hendricks, and he said that he sometimes would suffer from depression. And when he did, he would just get out of it by just figuring out, what can I do for somebody that would be nice to do for them? And he said it might be as simple as going next door and sweeping the neighbor's porch without them even knowing. Just go over there or whatever, if it was appropriate, of course. And so he would, or sweeping the hall in the apartment building and sweeping the stairs, anything like that. Just doing something nice for everybody else. It's a great way for us to look up, to help us to look up and to feel good. Number seven is to treat yourself to robust health. And this is one that Frank and I do all the time. We try to eat mostly organic foods from the garden, and we get plenty of sleep, and we drink lots of good, clean water. And if something's gone wrong, we create a healing checklist, and we go through it and make sure we've accomplished all those good things on the list every day, and we let it include fresh air and sunshine and time spent out in nature and getting our exercise. And if we've filled in our checklist, give ourselves a gold star. And then to have fun, to laugh and take the time to make new friends and to learn some good jokes. Frank is great about the jokes. We had so much fun with your dad, Tony, just cracking jokes the whole time he was here.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's very good at that.
It's a great thing to do. And
he always has fun.
He was so good about the making new friends part, too. We'd go to the park and he'd just walk right up to somebody. They got a soccer ball. Hey, how's it going? Are you voting for Brazil? It was just so wonderful to see him in action.
Yeah, he's very good like that.
Yeah, and to let ourselves be more playful and to do something fun that makes us smile every day. Then number nine is do what you love. At least once a day, do what you love. Listen to your inspirations, even if they're small ones. Heed them all. Give them top priority in your life and let them make your day. That's such a good one. I try to remember to do that every day. It's like if I wake up and I have an inspiration for something, even if it's as simple as going out and cleaning the fish pond, I'll just make sure that that's something that happens that day. And often I'll do it first thing. And then lastly, number 10, remember love. Remember that the core essence of our beings is love. And love is what we came from when we were conceived, and love is what we return to when we make our transition back into spirit. So remember to look for and see the love in yourself and in others throughout the day. And when you step into that flow of self-love, you enter into the great river of truth that flows throughout the universe. It's really a part of who we are. And then we're free to manifest the highest expression of our own unique, you know, view or part of divinity, our own part of that great dance of life. So if anybody would like a copy of these 10 steps, just go ahead and send me a little email from the contact page of my website, Yes, indeed, our lovely self-love slide. So there it is, so you can see them all there. Say I love you, forgive yourself, practice positive self-talk, treat yourself gently, think good thoughts, give and get help, treat yourself to robust health, have fun, do what you love, remember love.
Well, that's fantastic advice, Josephine. But I must say, I think I'm going to struggle with number one.
Oh, really?
I'm just trying to picture myself now going into the bathroom, looking in the mirror, and starting my day by saying, I love you.
Oh,
I don't know what the block is, but I just struggle to see myself doing that. And I was thinking of ways that I might be able to tempt myself into it.
Yeah.
So I was thinking perhaps I could imagine that I was playing a character in a play or a film who had this practice.
That's a good idea.
And, you know, and tell myself a story that would lead me to do this, just as a way of getting into it.
Yeah, well, you're not alone. You know, there are, I would say, most people that I have encouraged to do this exercise, a lot of times there are tears when we first do it, because somehow we have separated ourselves out from our own love.
Hmm.
And that's such a sad thing. And so when we finally do embrace ourselves again with love, it can be very, very deeply, profoundly meaningful on an emotional level. So however you need to, whatever, just go for it and get there if you can.
Okay, well, I'm going to give that a try tomorrow morning then and see how I get on.
Good deal.
Now, Josephine, I'm aware that you didn't get an opportunity to finish everything you wanted to say last week on the topic of how our sanctuary helps us with our boundaries. And I wondered if you could, you know, just spare a few minutes now to share some of that with us.
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to. So I really had to go through kind of a crash course on boundaries. And, you know, we're not often taught good boundaries as children. I know that my parents walked into my bedroom anytime, you know, just open the door, and same with my brothers. And of course, we all did that to each other, except my mom, actually, she would lock the door in the morning sometimes when she and my dad wanted to sleep in on the weekends, and we couldn't just walk into her room. But so that's a good thing. You know, sometimes we can have a demonstration of what a good boundary is like. But also another thing, too, is that children are often taught, at least in my generation, we were taught to be seen and not heard. And so, you know, something kind of rough could be going on, and we weren't supposed to speak up about it, so we didn't have that instruction on how to have a good boundary for ourselves to protect ourselves often. And so naturally growing up in our culture, and there's many wonderful and beautiful things about it, of course, but that was one of the things that was a little tough and hard, and I didn't really have good boundaries. And then additionally, I was looking for meaning in my life outside of my life, so I was searching for my purpose outside of myself, and there were a lot of good things that were happening in the world that I saw, various organizations that I began to volunteer for. This was after one of my big injuries where I'd spent a year in bed, and I couldn't quite yet get back into the working world because some days I would have good days and some days not so good. But I was able to volunteer because, you know, your volunteers, they show up when they can, and so I was able to show up when I could. So I was volunteering for a lot of these different organizations, and I felt a sense of meaning doing that. But it wasn't like I had really searched for my purpose from within myself. I was sort of searching outside of myself for purpose and meaning in life. So then my horse, my darling Duchess, she exhibited some really good boundaries, and I happened to be in the way. She was standing sniffing the noses of some other horses, and she let fly a big kick and a squeal when the other horses got a little fresh, and I happened to be standing behind her brushing out her tail, and that kick happened to my leg, and woo, it swelled up like a basketball, and I wound up on crutches or a cane for 8 different times over a period of 2 years and trying to heal that. It was a badly injured knee. But it did heal, and it healed all the way. I'm very nice and strong now today. But part of that journey, I was working with the teachers, and Jana Massey, my mentor and friend, and one of the messages that they gave quite frequently, along with the message of forgiveness and many other things, some of the great spiritual laws, but one of the messages that they gave was, and I think we had a slide for this the other day. I don't know if we have one today, but it was, no, we do have a slide today, and it says, only that which is mine to do, no more, no less. Maybe you can show that slide for us.
Certainly.
Great. And so my knee got to be in such a state that I had to stop all volunteering, and I just had to go within. And it was interesting because when that happened, then my work as a clairvoyant healer really began to blossom. And so our true purpose, you know, it comes from within us, finding ourselves. It comes from that place of beingness. And part of what I had to do during that time was I had to learn how to say no. And that was a little hard for me to do. So I actually created a cue card and put it on the bottom of the telephone because people would call and, you know, say, oh, Josephine, can you do such? And I would find myself saying, yes, of course, you know, because I think especially in our culture, we women are taught to just always be of service and to always be at other people's beck and call. And so I had to write things on that little cue card so I could actually pick up the telephone and look at it when my stomach started to reel and say, don't do it. I would say, you know, I really can't commit right now was one of them. Or let me stop you right there, you know, if somebody was going into a long story about what they wanted me to do. Or, I'll need to sleep on this one and I'll get back to you, you know. Or let me check my schedule book, you know, just different lines because I just, in those moments, I just couldn't come up with what I needed to say to begin to say no because it was so hard for me, as culturally conditioned as I was, to always say yes, to be able to say no. So I had to learn how to do that. So what I'd like to do, you know, I often like to give a little homework assignment. So what I'd like to ask all of you to do this week, if you can, is to take a look at your life and see if there are any times this week when you find yourself saying yes when your body is saying no, and to just pay attention to that, to just notice it. And then, of course, the next stage of the homework would be to go ahead and do something about it. In other words, to not proceed with whatever it might be and to just say, no, you know what, I need to take a little nap right now. Or no, I'll do that later, but I'm not going to do it right now.
I mean, that sounds wonderful. I mean, what if I have a job to do that somebody else wants me to do? And I think, oh, no, I'll just take a nap right now. Do you think I can get away with that?
Well, sometimes, and in some situations you can. Of course, there are many places where we can't, you know, where we have obligations and duties that we have to meet. We need to pay the rent. We need to pay the bills. We need to put food on the table or whatever it might be. But to see if there are some times when, you know, especially when it comes to social things, you know, where we can, where if we just aren't feeling it right in that moment, just say, you know what, I'm not feeling it right now. I just can't do it. I've got too much on my plate or whatever else it is. So just to look for and find little ways that you can stand up for yourself and protect yourself.
Yeah, I do think that it becomes a bit of a habit, you know, how we value our time or don't.
Yeah.
You know, if we're not used to having much time for ourselves,
yeah,
then I think it can be very hard.
It can.
To claim it and say, I need this or I want this or it's important, I have this time.
Yeah. But it's such an important thing for us to do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's something for me to work on this week as well. I'll let you know how I get on next week.
Great. Me too. You know, it's always a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
So now just a little more on boundaries and self-love. And this comes to that taking good care of ourselves, that one aspect of the, you know, the 10 steps towards self-love, which was to, you know, treat yourself to robust health. And in this one, you know, there are several things. Like, for instance, you've all probably heard, if you've been listening to this show very often, that I sometimes can have indiscretions with sugar. And whoa, baby, can it take me for a ride? And then I don't sleep well and all of that other thing. And there's other things, too. Other addictions that can happen that are sort of what we might call soft addictions, like coffee or caffeine. Some of us might have recreational drug habits. One friend of mine that I know, she says, oh, my God, I always pick the bad boy. You know, I can walk into a room full of guys, and the one guy who is really trouble, that's the one I want to date, you know. So she had to just realize that in herself and say, okay, no more dating until I figure this one out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so here's a little exercise that I'd like us all to do. So let's go ahead and take a couple of relaxed and easy breaths and just close our eyes. And, of course, if you're driving a car or something like that, just save this exercise for later. You'll remember it. And then take a moment and ask within, is there anything, any one thing that my body would really like me to let go of? And then imagine that there's a door in front of you, and open the door and step on through to the other side. And then imagine yourself giving yourself a big hug and just embrace with love the new you. And then take another relaxed and easy breath and let yourself come back to your normal waking consciousness. How was that for you, Tony?
Oh, that was very nice. Maybe I should do that before going to look at myself in the mirror in the morning. That might help a lot.
It's a good idea. Yeah. For me, I was like, oh, I think I'll try to get to bed a little earlier. Yeah.
Okay. Well, oh, you mean the thoughts about what to let go of?
Yeah. So my thought was to, you know, let go of staying up that a little extra bit to get those last few things done instead. No, let's just call it a day, because a little more sleep would be nice.
Oh, I was thinking let go of worry.
Oh, that's good. That's a nice one. Yeah, worry. Ooh. As Peace Pilgrim says, you know, doesn't do us much good. There's something that we can do, take action about, fine. But worry, she says, is a useless mulling over of something that we can't do anything about, and that we're just to give it over to God's hands and let it go. It's in the best possible hands, and not to give it another thought. Yeah, so now perhaps we can take this next slide, and this is again from Louise Hay, the master of demonstrating and teaching self-love. And one of the things that, and I've used this one so many times, like, you know, when my body might be saying, ooh, how about a nice cup of coffee or something, say, thank you for sharing. This used to serve me well, but it no longer serves me now. I choose this new way instead. So that was a nice little trick that I've used. And then another trick that I've used for some of these things is sort of like a step-down method. Chocolate is very addicting because not only does it have sugar, white sugar, refined sugar, which is very addicting to our bodies, unlike maple syrup or honey, but it also has magnesium. And black cherry juice concentrate is very rich in magnesium. So when I was first coming down off of chocolate, I would put a little black cherry juice concentrate in my water, and that really helped. And then coming down off of coffee, of course, I was able to help myself with a little roast aroma tea or Ticino or Postum or Dacopa, these other little nice coffee substitutes that don't have any caffeine in them, but they're rich, sort of grainy beverages. And then, of course, you know, in the United States here, we have these wonderful 12-step model for some of the more serious addiction problems, and there's a lot of different European models as well. And then for people who are having troubles with smoking, that wonderful book by Alan Carr, The Easy Way to Stop Smoking, is a great way to go. Yeah. So I think that another thing, too, is that we have to be really true to our feelings, what we are feeling about something, so far as finding our way in the world and letting it guide us. And I love that story about Gandhi, where when there was the tax on salt and the British situation in India, and he took a long time to meditate. I think it was more than a full month on what he needed to do, the steps he needed to take. And we do need to go within to find our way. And so that's a really good thing for us to do in situations where whatever is happening in our own lives or in the lives around us isn't working, is to look within to see what our part is, to find our way. And maybe you can show that next slide then, because I love this quote from Gandhi.
Certainly.
And it says, "My commitment must be to truth, not to consistency." And that's what he said when his, you know, various governors and people around who were helping him with the decision-making process kept saying, "Gandhiji, we need to know what to do. We haven't taken any action. It's been weeks now," you know, and he said, I'm sorry, I've got to go meditate. I've got to meditate on it. And pretty soon he finally just in somewhat of exasperation said to them, "Look, you know, I cannot tell you. I don't know yet. And my commitment must be to truth, not to consistency." So he wasn't going to be able to come up with the answer just yet, as they were hoping and had expected.
Yes, that's very powerful and very provocative, because often the feeling is that we should be consistent. You know, we did this before, we should do it again.
Yeah.
And it's inviting us not to do that, but, you know, to always keep going inside again and again. And maybe what was true yesterday won't be true today and that we'll have to change.
Yeah, well, consistency is one of the hobgoblins of my own mind.
But it's a very creative way of living, isn't it? Because it's forcing you to constantly ask, am I going the right way? Is this right for me? Is this right for everyone?
Yeah.
And to make a fresh choice again and again.
Yeah. So it's from our good, healthy boundaries that we can really enter into the boundlessness. And, you know, the wise teachers of India really realized that our psychic ability is a byproduct of our spiritual development. And they speak about the siddhis, you know, the various skills that come that are considered psychic skills, like teleportation or levitation or even stopping the flow of blood from within the person, you know, or being in two places at once. And it's our self-love and our connection to our divinity and our practices of prayer and meditation and dream interpretation that increase our spiritual development. And these, along with some of those foundational spiritual practices, like taking a look at what our motivation might be for something that we're doing, or that golden rule, doing unto others as you would have them do unto you, these practices act like guards at the gate through which we must pass before we fully develop our psychic skills. And that's why all of my radio programs, which are on how we can develop our psychic ability, are so focused on spiritual development as well, because it's through our spirituality that our psychic ability really flourishes. And this is how we reach that interconnectedness, that same union with everything and seeing everything as divine that, you know, Grace Babulka Hatmaker and Anita Morjani were speaking of that I was sharing earlier today in today's show.
That's really, really helpful for me, Josephine, to have you say that again and again, that there, you know, this relationship between psychic ability and spiritual development, and that the two are, you know, intimately connected.
Yeah.
And that, you know, my ability to perceive things, to improve that, to become, you know, to rely more on my intuition gets greater as I develop spiritually, and the other way around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's from that good boundary that we have from developing our spirituality that we can enter into that psychic ability, and that is where we enter into the boundless. And that's part of what, you know, I love, is that it's from our good boundaries we find boundlessness. And so, you know, thus, in my own development, I was able to, as I began to work on these principles and these practices, I was able to begin to do things like talking with plants, and my medical intuitive work began to blossom, and I also began to understand that atomic physics idea of the atom, where there's that shared space, that vast amount of space inside of each atom, and that space inside of each atom is also a part of the same space that's inside of my body and inside of the bodies of others, and that we can travel on that clear space to really connect with each other. And I'd just like to share a couple of really intriguing little psychic experiences that I had that were a part of this as I was kind of moving into this boundlessness, and they were time bleed-throughs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, times where I found myself, you know, just a part of another time. So one of them was at the Kmart up in Paso Robles. Such a funny place to have a really profound psychic experience. But it's built on top of a Chumash burial site. And we had a dear friend who was the spokesperson for the North American Chumash Council. And he stayed at our house for a while as they were going up, as the bulldozers were preparing the ground for the building of that building. And he would walk in front of the bulldozers and look for the bones to be relocated, and when they found them. And so I always kind of felt a little bit like, gosh, I don't know if I really want to go into that Kmart. But one day we did have to go in because we'd received a gift, which was a lovely gift, but it wasn't something that was compatible with something, the technology that Frank had. So we were going to go return it. And I went with Frank, and he was looking at all the technical stuff in the aisle there. And I just kind of wandered off and was looking across the rows of dresses and blouses and things off into the distance. And all of a sudden, in more than my imagination, I saw this Indian man, a Chumash man, who was standing near some of those particular type of huts that they have that are the folded reeds bent over a willow framework that makes a little round hut with a little door opening there at one side. And there was a circle of people, Indian, you know, or Chumash people, who were doing a dance, a circle dance, and they had like little bracelets on their ankles that were little nuts or something that were sort of banging together. And this one man standing on the far side of the circle of dancers could see into the Kmart and could see me. And I could see into his reality and see him.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, my God, what is going on here? And it just happened for just a moment. And then you know how sometimes these things are. I mean, sometimes the paranormal can kind of freak us out. And it certainly freaked me out. And I thought, oh, my God. And I just like, ah! And kind of just immediately left the store. And I was like, Frank, yeah, I'll see you outside. you know, these things kind of can happen. This boundlessness can take place. Not only can it be our psychic ability, but it can also be really unusual experiences like that. And so, anyway, I just love that we can access the boundlessness and how that ties in with our, you know, beautiful experiences that we were talking about with these near-death experiences, about how there really is this vast consciousness that has nothing to do with time or space,
mm-hmm.
and it's accessible to all of us.
But that thing you just described there about the freaking out, because it is so vast and so unknown, you can see why you need to have those boundaries. Otherwise, it would be almost too scary.
Yeah.
But to allow yourself to experience the boundlessness.
Right. Right. That's exactly it.
Well, on that note, Josephine, I have some slightly bad news. We're almost out of time.
Oh dear. Not again.
Unfortunately.
So, oh, it's been so fun.
It has been so much fun. So let me just say that the link to next week's show can be found on Josephine's website at stepintomagic.com. Just click on the top menu for radio. And if you have a question for us or would like to be included on our weekly newsletter, please just go to the contact page of Josephine's website. That's stepintomagic.com and send us your message. So, Josephine, do you have any parting words for us that you'd like to say?
Oh, yes, and thank you so much for that, Tony. I'd just like to say that when we know our past and we understand the truth of who we are, which is a portion of divinity, we can embrace self-love and stand in our truth in a balanced and centered way. And from this point of beingness, there is no need to look outside of ourselves for our actions and directions in life. We will know from within, and it will bring us joy. In closing, I'd like to say thank you, all of you, very sincerely, for giving me the gift of your time. And I'd like to finish with this little blessing. As our gifts are given in love, they are received in love. And we honor their wise use and their increase for all concerned. And so it is.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine. As always, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. And I trust that everyone listening has learned lots about the importance of deepening our knowledge of ourselves. This has been show number SA-5.14. And if you've enjoyed the show, we really hope that you will tell your friends. We look forward to having all of you join us again next week when Josephine will be talking about the gift of meditation.
Tony and I wish you all insight, wisdom, and magic as you pursue the journey of inner knowing. And I hold you all in light and in love. Thank you so much for listening. This is Josephine Lang. Until next week, good night.